So that said, it is 2:30. It is a Tuesday. And because of that, I'm going to bring in Connor Boyack for the Boyack Review. Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. So you want to talk about the education bubble.
The big bubble. And I have to laugh, Jake. You'll note this. I've been tracking the bank closings for several years, when the FDIC, will go and take over a bank, and it's really interesting. It's always on a Friday, always, without fail, they'll release, oh, we closed 4 banks today, or 9, or 2, or 5, or however many. They always do it on a Friday, and this is actually very smart from a PR standpoint, because people aren't paying attention, they're signed off for the weekend, they're not watching the news as much anymore.
And Fridays are notoriously bad for news. They're not going to pick up press release on a Friday. They rarely do it because they're slammed.
Right, exactly. And so it's a great, when you have bad news, it's almost more interesting to watch the news on Friday if you really want to pay attention, because it's when the juicy tidbits are dropped that they hope no one sees.
Yeah.
And so this is the case with the FDIC bank closures without fail. This past Friday, an interesting thing came out when the Department of Education at the federal level released new data on the default rates of federal student loans. And this is actually a very interesting snapshot of what the education bubble is looking like. Up until now, there's been a lot of numbers, there's been a lot of speculation and worry and everything, but what happened was the education department historically has only been required to report the default rates for a 2-year window, meaning if you get a loan today, only for the next 2 years will the education department have to report to Congress about your loan, of course, in the aggregate with everyone else's together. So it was a very small snapshot of how people were actually defaulting. Of course, you can default 5, 10, 15 years in the future, but the education department was only legislatively being required to report on the first 2 years.
Hold on. I'm really sorry, Connor, but I'm running this contest. Can you hold on just a second? We got two callers that they've been really ringing in. Hold on just a second. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have an answer real quick?
Yes, Alyssa Rosenbaum.
Ah, you're very close. You're very close.
Alyssa Zinoviana Rosenbaum.
You're very, very close. Okay, I will give it to you. Yes. So how'd you do it? What'd you do? Wikipedia?
No, Ayn Rand biography.
Ah, good. Okay, what is your name, sir?
It's RJ.
RJ. Okay, RJ, you come to the station. I'll have 2 extra large T-shirts with your name on it.
Appreciate it. I'll get there tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Yep.
Sorry, Connor. Just had to get that out of the way.
You've actually got me curious. What was the question?
Oh, it was, what was Ayn Rand's real name?
Ah, got it. Yeah, I wouldn't have known that.
Rosenbaum. I was actually just looking for Rosenbaum. Sometimes people call her Alice, but yeah, it was Alyssa, so. Anyway, education bubble.
Right.
I'm sorry, Connor, for...
No, that's quite all right.
Well.
Good data point to be aware of. So anyways, back to what I was saying, it's ridiculous to track default rates as somehow being authoritative or legitimate when you're only tracking the first 2 years. So in 2008, Congress passed a new bill, and this was 2008, requiring them to report 3 years, but they set out the beginning of that reporting until this year. So this year, last Friday, was the first time that the Department of Education has increased the reporting requirements, the data that they give Congress and the public, from 2 years to 3. Now, again, that means that they're tracking the first 3 years, I suppose they're tracking all years, but they're only reporting the first 3 years of any given loan to show how many people are defaulting. And the data is just phenomenally catastrophic. And again, we're just talking about the first 3 years. And so this is a very conservative conclusion of what's going on with the education bubble. But what this effectively amounts to is the subprime market for education. And so as we get into some of the numbers here, I think that assertion will easily bear itself out. So as of before Friday, when they were only reporting what's called the 2-year default cohort, or this 2-year snapshot of how many people were defaulting, it was 8.8% for the 2009 year. So this is last year when they had reported from between 2009 and 2011. It was 8.8% of loans had defaulted, which is actually a very substantial number. This is no small dice or, something. When we're talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars, 8.8% is a substantial amount. And this is what led to these articles and discussion and controversy over the education bubble, that this many people are defaulting. Well, finally this year, when they got to the 2012 report that included the 3 years of data, it surged to 13.4%. So 13.4% of all of the federal student loans for all colleges, both private and public, 13.4% of them are defaulting. And so continuing with the very conservative conclusions, assuming that everything else is equal and stable, which of course is not true in this market at all, but just for discussion's sake, there's almost a trillion. There's $914 billion in outstanding federal student loans. So rounded up ever so slightly, just for simplicity's sake, to $1 trillion. There is now, because of this 13.4% default rate, that means there is at least, again, a very conservative estimate, at least $122 billion in federal student loan defaults. And, of course, this is increasing every day. Now, why do I compare it to subprime? Well, in March of 2007, the value of the subprime mortgage market was estimated at $1.3 trillion, just above where the federal student loan is currently at. And those who are, you know, you yourself are quite aware, and your listeners who remember, that one of the reasons that the market started to slip and tank was because people started defaulting. Of course, the subprime mortgage market was called that because these were people who were incentivized or required by the government to start giving out mortgages to people who obviously could not pay them back. They simply did not have the required debt-to-income ratio that could justify them taking out these loans. So they were subprime mortgages. So people start defaulting on these, and that starts compounding and spilling over into other areas, and of course it really dropped the entire market and did not stick just to mortgages. So that's exactly, I think, in my opinion, what we're going to see here with the education bubble. Of course, if the bubble bursts, then it splatters all over everything. The education bubble is, in effect, a new subprime where we've got 13.4% of all federal student loans defaulting. We're in now in the what is that, six digits, $122 billion as a conservative estimate of the current defaults that are increasing every day. And it's interesting when you look at the for-profit educational institutions, which basically exist to milk money from the government. These are not true free market private educational institutions. They basically exist to suck at the teat of Uncle Sam. They have a three-year default rate of 22.7%. Almost double of what the general average is. And so I think an easy conclusion to draw from this, these very conservative estimates, again, last week we talked about these illions, right? I mean, it's hard to understand how significant a number like $122 billion is when we hear about trillions and all of this. But it is a very substantial number, and these are defaults. This is debt that's having to be written off. And again, having only that three-year snapshot, what would it be like if we had 4 years or five or six? And as the education bubble continues to burst, those numbers that aren't being reported become all the more significant because more and more and more people are beginning to default on these overwhelmingly expensive loans that they took out. So this, I think, it's very interesting. In fact, there's a great article from last Friday when this data was reported on ZeroHedge.com. It's a great economic policy and advocacy website to kind of break some of this stuff down. They went into the numbers and have a great report about what this means and how this really is. In fact, their article is called "The Next Subprime Crisis is Here." This is a substantial amount of money, and I think in the ensuing months and years, there's going to be a lot more chatter about this, and we're going to begin to see that splatter effect I talked about as this bubble really begins to burst.
Yeah, it's... this is actually why I have like an entire, of the three sections in my new book. One is all on debt defaults because I think people are very confused right now as to where they should really be aiming their concern. And these defaults, when you add in, so you're bringing up something that is definitely a wave that's about to crash. We're just seeing the little tiny ripples right now. But when that wave crashes, it's going to be followed by an even bigger wave behind it of all of these derivative liabilities, which are effectively going to have to be defaulted on as well. Yep. We've really got to batten down the hatches because this stuff is going to get worse. Great topic today on defaults and the education bubble. Guys, come on back. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review right here, Mental Self Defense Radio, K-Talk, AM 630. Come on back. Call in number 801-254-5855. See you on the other side of these commercials. All right, guys, welcome back, Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am your host, Jake Shannon. We are in the middle of the Boyack Review. We've got Connor Boyack with us. It is a Tuesday. It is after 2:30. The call-in number is 801-254-5855. Connor is talking about the education bubble. Connor, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, so the floor is yours.
So, you know, we're talking about this education bubble that people have been talking about for years. I mean, you see how expensive education is. You see the rates at which people are borrowing to hopefully pay down their education in the future. And the numbers have been rising, and they've been staggering for a very long time. But until Friday, I don't think there had been as compelling a data as was just released by the Department of Education. There have clearly been statistics on how big hundreds of billions of dollars the federal student loan market currently is, that it's substantially increasing on a daily basis, that there have been defaults and people aren't, of course, you know, they take out, you know, $100,000 student loan over the 4 or 6 or 8 years of college, and then they end up working at Starbucks. Clearly, they're not going to be able to pay back the loan. And so there have been defaults. This is a known issue. This isn't anything revelatory. What is new, what is revelatory, is the staggering amount at which the default rates are currently occurring because of this increased reporting requirement. Whereas before, they were only reporting the first 2 years of a 10, 20, however long these the term of these loans are, they were only being required by Congress to report the first 2 years. By extending that just one additional year, the number almost doubled. Whereas before it was 8.8% default rate, which itself is a very large number, we now learn that within the first 3 years of loans, for the past 3 years, 13.5% of debtors that have these federal student loans are defaulting completely on the debt. They simply cannot pay it back. What's interesting, I think, that has some implications, not just for this market, but just in general of how these government numbers are presented to the public. As we talked about last week, these numbers are always and manipulated.
Well, that's what makes me happy is that people, you know, listening right now are waking up. Not only, you know, hopefully people have already gotten the fact that unemployment numbers are manipulated
right.
In a very similar way. I mean, this is how the Federal Reserve numbers. People only look at M1, M2, or maybe they extrapolate M3, and they don't understand how in a fiat debt money system that credit also is in the... This is the big problem, is people rely on the government for these statistics.
That's exactly right. You know, unemployment is clearly an easy one to explain to people how that's manipulated, how the government is selectively reporting people who are or are not still looking for a job and how long they've been looking. It's completely arbitrary, and it's horribly manipulated. The CFI, the inflation rate, of course, is the same, or CPI, is the same way. In fact, a great website I'm sure you're familiar with, but in case your listeners aren't, is shadowstats.com. Done by a guy named John Williams, and it's basically shadow government statistics, and he presents a kind of more free market, legitimate, and accurate statistic for things like inflation and unemployment to help understand the way things really are. And so the government historically has, you know, repeatedly manipulated the data that they present to the public, of course, which benefits them by not having people, not inciting any panic, any riots, any bank runs, anything that would jeopardize the slow and steady
status quo. Not until, of course, they get their investments right.
Right, exactly. And the reason I bring all this up, the government manipulation of data, the fudging of numbers, and the arbitrary selection of how data is reported, the reason I say all this is because that is exactly what is currently happening with the education bubble, with the reporting requirements by the Department of Education for the condition of the debtors with these loans. Even when you just look at the example, as we've been discussing, of only having to report the first 2 or first now 3 years, that itself is an arbitrary selection that hides from the public what is happening during years 4, 5, 6, and however long they go. But the reason that I bring this up specifically is, yes, that is problematic in and of itself. But by telling people that they would only have to start reporting for the first 2 years and thereafter they would not have to, or now 3 years, that allows for the manipulation of behavior this moral hazard that otherwise would not occur. Now, by knowing that, oh, well, if we just defer our payments back for the first 2 years and then we start having to pay back and, of course, struggle with payments in years 3, 4, 5, and 6, that's not going to be reported, so it's not as big a deal. Then you can default and we'll work it out and everything will be fine. Now, by providing this window, that allows people to, for example, the people who are involved in the loan industry, As I mentioned, this law that was passed in 2008 that extended the requirement from 2 to 3 years. In the committee hearings about this bill as it was being worked up, there were accusations made by some of the congressmen against especially the for-profit educational institutions, which, as I mentioned, are not free market. They're simply corporatist and suck at the teat of Uncle Sam. They were manipulating, alleged by this committee in Congress to have been manipulating the data to minimize the chances of risking losing that funding source. So they would encourage people to just defer payments and look for programs and exemptions within the loan application process and payment process so as to minimize the defaults that were occurring during that first two-year window. So anyone who claims that this is a problem with the free market or anything is horribly misguided, of course, because this is so intertwined and controlled by government that, you know, the free market hasn't been seen in education federally for, you know, decades.
This is my problem with Republicans who claim to, except for Ron Paul, who claim to defend the free market, because they don't, what they're defending is this, what you're talking about, this awful collusion, this fascism, this stated state capitalism, not laissez-faire capitalism, but this mishmash nastiness with the Community Reinvestment Act and all this crazy stuff and Fannie and Freddie, that is not a free market.
Right. No, I think that's especially important to bring up, especially as we compare it to what's been happening the past few years, right? With subprime and the market tanking, of course, you have your general leftist people trying to blame capitalism and free markets when really it is the lack of thereof that has precipitated the collapse. But as I mentioned earlier in this segment, this is quite applicable to the subprime mortgage, right? We're nearing the total amount of federal student loans is nearing the amount of the subprime mortgage market right before the 2007 collapse. In fact, if you take the, it's about $60 billion per quarter that the federal funded student loans is increasing. And so right now where we're just under $1 trillion, it's about 18, in about 18 months, this market for federal student loans will be the same size, $1.3 trillion, as was subprime right before it collapsed. So as we talk, just as you were mentioning, as we talk about, you know, whether this is or isn't the free market, I think we have some interesting data, some correlative data at least, between just a few years ago about what happened with that market, the effects of it as it began to default and collapse, and how that just, you know, blasted laterally to other sectors of the economy. We're going to see some substantial movement, I think, with this collapse. It's not going to be a contained one. It affects so many people. And in fact, I haven't run the numbers, but I'd be curious to see how many debtors there are compared to how many people held subprime mortgages. I don't have that data. But the fact that 13.5% are defaulting within the first 3 years, we're going to be hearing a lot more about this. Of course, despite the government's wishes and doing whatever it can to minimize the issue and the data reporting requirements, this is something I think that's going to increase and not decrease in the public's eye.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, and this is something that we've seen in the past. I mean, the United States has defaulted on debts before, usually more often at the state level of government. But, I mean, this is something that we need to be very, very aware of. And people don't understand, you know, what happens when all these people default on debts? What happens to that?
Mm-hmm.
That money just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. This is another way of manipulating the money that people don't realize. I mean, this is the case to get central banking gone, to allow currencies to compete, to allow a gold standard to compete with full fractional, with fractional reserve banking, all this kind of stuff. You know, we need to allow these different systems to compete so we can see which one actually is the sturdiest and strongest instead of this ridiculous monopoly. And it's so funny because, you know, the people, you're right, on the left, they're so critical of quote-unquote capitalism. And it really, what they're being critical of, this thing that they call capitalism, is actually their, like, wet dream. Because because it is. It's a government monopoly over the economy. It's well, what happens in communist China. They have a central bank.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the whole, you know, he who doesn't learn from the past is doomed to repeat it. I think we see that. And you got to wonder the gullibility or the naivete of the American public to allow this thing to happen without, you know, just demanding substantial and actual change, right? I've been talking about this $1.3 trillion number for the subprime market and that the federal student loans is almost getting there. But, you know, in 2005, 2006, the number of subprime mortgages made that were projected to end in foreclosure as we were rolling right into the collapse was 1 in 5, 20%. And we've already surpassed that number in the education bubble with the for-profit institutions, which stand at 22% just during the first 3 years. It's probably a lot worse. We're at 13.5% for the whole general market in the first 3 years. We're seeing the same things happen again. And, of course, what is the result? People, you know, just going back to the mortgage issue alone, people demand more bailouts, more rescues. We see QE3, QEfinity, the Fed coming to the rescue and promising to buy more mortgages, right, enabling the very things that led us into the 2007 collapse in the first place. We're going to see, I think, this issue play out in the presidential campaigns as people ask about, you know, the right to an education and people should be able to get an affordable education, and we're going to involve the government to drive the cost of education down so it's more affordable. This is something that has been horribly skewed in the past several years by the government, and people think that the answer to the interventions is yet more interventions, right? They don't realize that it was the interventions themselves that caused it. They think it was not enough interventions. This is historical, and it's with the going back to the Depression, people have been arguing the same thing. So this is an issue I think that's going to get worse before it gets better, but it's interesting to ask whether the education bubble has popped, right? Whether we've reached the peak. And when you look at that comparison to subprime, or when you look at these loans just on their own, when you say that within the first 3 years, 13.5% of people are completely defaulting on their debt, I think that's a bubble burst. And, of course, people are going to try and keep inflating the bubble quicker than the air is escaping through the pop. This isn't over. But I think this definitely is a bubble that has burst, and it just is going to take a little bit of time for those effects to begin to move laterally to other sectors of the economy before people realize how much is being affected by these substantial defaults that are occurring just with the education debt alone.
And one of the big differences I think that people need to be aware of when this education bubble has finally run its course, you have to understand one of the big differences between the mortgage and subprime and all that kind of stuff that collapsed starting in 2006, 2007-ish, with student loans, you can't declare bankruptcy on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a law. Whereas you can declare bankruptcy and walk away from your mortgage. You can't do that when you take out a federal student loan.
Well, and there's no asset underlying the loan. There's no house that they can turn around and sell.
So you
there's
are
no
really
value.
A debt slave. I mean, it is really indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm. Voluntary servitude. And I think that's an excellent point, right? There's no inherent value in the loan. You are the asset, right? And
yep.
You can't just walk away from that debt, you know, the same way. That's a very good point.
Yeah, I think that's going to be where, you know, we convert a lot of people that are in the younger group that aren't already libertarian into when they fully realize, holy moly, this is a total con game. Not only have I been paying into Social Security and won't see a dime of it, now you guys are trying to turn me into a debt slave? I mean, I think that this is a very prescient topic to be discussing.
Well,
thanks, Connor.
And I think it's a very opportunistic moment, right? Because people can look at the staggering amount of debt that is supposedly required to get an education, that indentured servitude. There are so many free market, private, online, free alternatives that we can begin to explore and promote.
Yep, absolutely. Great, great topic. Connor, thanks again.